in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 245 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. You all right, Sean?
I'm good. I'm just updating my apps on the iPad.
Is it that time of the month?
It is.
And who persuaded you to do that? Did you get a little notification?
Yeah, a little dot came up.
There's little...
Had 13 on it. It's
red
13.
Dots that persuade us to do things. We're talking about persuasion this week, the gentle art of persuasion, you know. It affects all aspects of life, doesn't it?
Do you say infects?
Affects, infects, who knows, man? Yeah, man, if you're persuaded to buy something that you don't really need, have you been infected?
Yeah.
We'll come on to that.
You could be.
Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for the show notes and links. Put your email address in the box and we'll send you some free meditation files and you'll get a discount code for our book as well. Not too shabby.
Yep.
How you doing, Sean?
I'm good.
What's new? What's occurring?
I'm good. Just work. And holidays coming up in a bit, so...
Okay.
Looking forward to that.
Bit of R&R coming up.
Yeah.
I've just been away last weekend. Well, I went to Stratford-upon-Avon, but didn't get into Stratford-upon-Avon itself. We're just on the outskirts, and the weather was a bit rubbish, so I just stayed and watched rugby, and it was like a house full. Well, it had this huge kind of farmhouse, or like complex of houses almost. I think it was about, including kids, 24, 25 people.
Wow.
Family members all mucking in, and it's a good laugh, though.
Yeah, brilliant.
Pretty lucky that we can do that, really.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, not all families are that functional, dysfunctional.
So was it a house that you hired, or...?
Yeah. It was just a holiday. Yeah. Like, we did have a... Even had a hot tub, but they wanted some extra cash for that, so we didn't use the hot tub. Yeah, it was a good life. It was a good laugh, and yeah, there's a lot of little babies on the scene now as well. So
we were all sitting, playing with each other.
Well, they're too young to even do anything yet, so it was just funny watching all the new parents struggling and stressing about naps and feeding and all that as we sat back and just watched ours running around like headless chickens.
Yeah, so you could just sort of lie back and enjoy.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, some other members of the family were trying to persuade us to have another child. But
you, as in, actually have another child? Not look after another child.
No. Yeah, I'll have a little cuddle and look after for a short amount of time. But their persuasive powers weren't up to much because, well, it's going to need a lot more persuading from my side.
I think you should have twins.
Can you arrange that?
I bet you can't have twins.
Yeah, I'll show you. I know you're talking. So yeah, let's get on to it. We're talking about persuasion. This is something I've wanted to talk about for a while, really. What the best ways are to persuade people to come around to your way of thinking, or...
I think there's loads of layers of this, because I think all the time, we're persuading people all the time, every day. The way you say hello to people when you meet them can either sound like a declaration of love or a declaration of war. So we're starting to have an effect on the way that people respond to us.
Yeah.
And even if there's someone that you really don't like, if you come and you go, oh, hi, how are you? It's so good to see you. There's a whole different kind of response. So I think we're all playing the game. There are some fabulous videos of babies and mothers, and they're split screen so you can see the two faces.
Yeah.
And how much the baby is in control. When the baby wants attention from the mother, the baby will smile and Google so that the mother turns around and goes, oh, do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, and you start to realise that the baby's in control of it.
So from day one, almost, we're learning how to...
The thing for me is that all behaviour...
In fact.
All behaviour, even altruistic behaviour, is reward-driven. People do things because they get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and people get a bit offended by that. What do you mean? I don't, you know, even if what you get out of it is you feel good for doing it.
Yeah.
You know, you give charity. You know, you give £3 when it says on the screen to buy a blanket in wherever. Yeah, and you feel good because you've done it. So you've got the reward from the behaviour. So the thing is that the persuasion has to work towards a reward.
Yeah. Well, persuasion is quite a positive word as well, isn't it? To be persuaded to do something is fine, but if you change persuasion to manipulation, all of a sudden it kind of has more sinister connotations, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But are they just the same thing?
Well, yes. The thing is that if you look at it in terms simply of behaviour, is driven by one of two rewards. Either I'm rewarded by going towards what I want or what makes me feel better or more secure, and the other driver in that is I'm going to do things that make me avoid things that I fear, that I'm worried about, that might make me feel insecure.
Yep.
Yeah, so you get two drivers, a driver away from the negative and a driver towards the positive. Yeah. And if you look at advertising will start to try and make you feel insecure. So I love those adverts where you see the toilet bowl and then all these germs are in the toilet bowl and they're all there having this conversation and suddenly the flush comes and they're all washed away with the chemical that's going to change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we're doing is we're playing on the fear of disease and illness and nastiness and dirt and rubbish and bleh, yeah, followed by the security of, wow, if I use this product, isn't the world going to be safe and wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
So the advertiser's clever because it's using both drivers, the negative and the positive.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I was quite interested, obsessed. I mean, what I do, my work is more design. I try not to pretend anymore to that I'm a marketing expert. Sometimes people want me to be, but I'm not. I kind of nuts and bolts. I'll make leaflets, websites, posters that look good, that I hope will have the desired outcome, but ultimately it's kind of I need the input from a marketing expert really to say whether or not this is the wording you should use. But I'm fascinated by all that side of things. We've got Mike in the office here who does Google AdWords campaigns, so, and that's incredible really. So if you search for something on Google, you'll get that initial three or four whatever sponsored listings that are trying to persuade you to click through to that website to get that bit of information.
And he's got lots of resources for us to hook into, haven't you?
Mike's got loads of stuff. Send us a list of links and books.
He was telling this one about how you can get, is it kisses?
Phone numbers,
all right. After it was kisses, there you go. How you get phone numbers from ladies and what are the things that come into play that are either negative drivers or positive drivers?
Yeah.
So was it, if it was raining,
if it was sunny, you were twice as likely to get the phone.
So if it's sunny, you got that added positive,
mm-hmm.
yeah? But that means if it's overcast or raining, then that's going to be the negative driver.
So stay in that night, yeah.
So and I think when you're looking at drivers for persuasion, it's important to identify the negative as well as the positive.
Yeah.
You know? It's like if I offer you promotion, that's the positive driver. The negative driver is you've got to stay the same way you are or look like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so the two things run together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating for me, a business point of view. But you'll have people that come into your little office back at home, back at base, or wherever you're out and about doing it, and you will know that this person, or at least you will hope that this person follows your direction and makes this change, that their life will be better. But how do you persuade them to do that if you know it's going to be hard work for them and they're kind of resisting?
You get them to... The art of therapy is enabling someone to make a decision.
Self-help podcast, isn't it, man?
Yeah. Now, it may be that you can see someone running towards the edge of the cliff and you might suggest to them that if they go that way, this might be the outcome. Yeah, which is looking at the negative drivers.
Yeah.
And sometimes the person will say, yeah, I get that, or we'll talk about it, and they say, no. And then very often in that situation, people need to crash and burn before they come back up again.
So they'll need to learn a hard lesson.
Yeah, and we say that, don't we? You know, some people need to learn the hard way, and some people do. Mm. But that's usually a lack of insight or awareness.
Yeah, so because you can learn the lesson without jumping off the cliff.
Yeah. Well, one of the crazy things is we say that we can't learn lessons from other people's example, and we have to do it ourselves. That isn't true. Mm. If you have a good imagination and empathy, you can learn from other people's experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's when you disassociate from other people's experience that you have to do it yourself for it to drive in.
So let's talk about, for example, if we've got friends and family who, well, we could, let's say they're smoking, they're smokers and they're hooked on the old sin sticks, cigarettes, and we know, well, they know obviously that it's bad for them because it's pretty much, I think it's, the science is pretty much settled there, but still they persist. And nothing we can do or say is changing their minds.
But then so you've got the balance. Like the negative driver is, I know that if I do that, I'm going to get ill or could kill myself. The positive driver is the satisfaction of alleviating the craving that I have for nicotine.
Hmm.
Yeah. So these two drivers are working against each other. The problem is that if I try to stop smoking, the negative drivers start kicking in. You know, so we get the positive-negative kicking in against each other all the time.
I've got some friends who their mother-in-law, I can't remember, yeah, whatever, was a heavy smoker, and grandkids started to appear on the scene, and obviously the grandparent who was smoking wanted access to the kids, but my friends basically said, well, you can, but you're going to have to stop smoking because we don't want your secondhand smoke around our kids, which is fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, although she doesn't quit completely, but certainly doesn't smoke anywhere near them. And cut back a lot, so that kind of fear of missing out on grandchildren was enough.
But that's what I mean about persuasion comes in both as negative and positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes the negative driver leads to the positive outcome.
But what could they have done before that? Because you assume, you know, your mum or your dad has been smoking for 20, 30 years, you know they're getting to that age where the risks of lung cancer or whatever throat issues is increasing. Without having grandchildren, what could they have done before then?
But, I mean, the answer really is nothing. Because the thing is, on what basis are we seeking to persuade another person to do whatever? And wanting to persuade someone to do what we want them to do. You know, if I'm a member of ISIS, can I persuade you to convert?
Yeah, right.
or if I'm a redneck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's that kind of stuff, isn't it? So that kind of idea of extorting or exerting, trying to get people to do stuff, because I think that they should, sometimes does persuade people to do things, especially if I'm threatening to drill holes in their kneecaps, they might be persuaded to do it.
Yeah.
But it's not a positive driver, it's not a positive change. I think that the idea of... Most smokers these days smoke outside, don't they? And well, there must be people who still smoke inside houses. But most families say if you want to smoke, okay, go outside and do it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, in restaurants and public places.
Yeah.
It's just... I remember when that started to roll out, because I used to go out uni student days and smoking in bars was the done thing. And then there was quite... Yeah. I was of an age, probably 23, 24, when the ban came in. And... the immediate change was quite... It was interesting, because all of a sudden you could smell what a bar or a pub actually smelled like, and the smell changed. But I remember there was quite a big resistance from smokers from, I don't know, whether there was some kind of professional lobby that was trying to stop it or...
But the big argument that happened was they said that their human rights were being...
Yeah.
Infringed. Is and then there was the argument about, well, what about the human rights of the other people that got to smoke the passive smoke when you... Well, that kind of stuff that came in.
So how do we make these big shifts inside? Because at the time it was a big deal. 10 years on, it's like, yeah, it's I can't believe we didn't do it sooner, probably, etc. How can we make these big shifts in society and affect change?
Yeah, usually it's because there are no choices. You know, I mean, with things like smoking, the issue was it was becoming so expensive to deal with. The effects of smoking.
Yeah,
that's where the big driver came from.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had fabulous... do you see those adverts where there was a cigarette and suddenly there was like, I don't know, maggoty kind of human tissue
like flesh,
coming out the end of the...
Really, they really ramped up the fear, didn't they?
Yeah.
To a point where it was like, okay, fair enough.
So negative driver. So when you see the cigarettes, it used to be the positive driver of this is a really sexy packet. And there
were cool
Stuyvesant cigarettes that said, this is the passport to international smoking pleasure. It was all that kind of stuff. But now on the packet it says, this can kill you, this can create cancer. No, it's very explicit.
I'm watching Mad Men on Netflix at the moment. So I think it's like four or five seasons of it. We're kind of halfway through season 3, I think. It's cool. It's a good show. But they're advertising executives, you know, in the 50s America, maybe 60s America. Proper cool. They're all smoking. They're all, like, having whiskeys at, like, 10 in the morning every day and living the dream. But last night I watched an episode where they lost a big... they've lost a whole load of clients for whatever reason because of the way the story's going. And one of them was a big tobacco client who had paid their bills for years and years and years, and they'd lost them, gone to another company. So they were looking for ideas on the main character. And in the middle of the night, he drafted this advert for his agency, basically saying that new science has come to light, et cetera, et cetera. We'll no longer be taking on tobacco clients because we think it's damaging the nation. So rather than... and all his partners hated him for it. But they did get some work out of it. I'm not sure where the series is going, but it looks like it's going to work for the positive. So rather than chasing extra tobacco clients, they kind of made this big stand to say, right, no more. Even though he didn't really believe it. You know, he was just doing it because he wanted more business from elsewhere. But the public reaction was like, whoa.
That idea about do you believe it, you know, fake it to make it stuff.
Yeah.
If you look at a barrister, I've worked with quite a few barristers over the years, and they say to me, because some of the things that they go into courtrooms and defend are absolutely indefensible. And I say, how on earth can you do that? How can you go in and try and persuade a jury and a judge on something that you know is wrong? Mm-hmm. And they say, it's nothing to do with me, I'm just an advocate. I've got a client, and the client tells me what they want me to advocate for them.
Yeah, that's
why
it's fascinating that.
Yeah.
The worst people in the world will need representation and need their side arguing. How do you find people that will argue that side? It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you work with barristers, you have that ability, you know, to put their own beliefs on one side and represent another person as though they were that person.
Mm.
That's really, really strange, because they're trying to persuade people of something that they don't even believe themselves.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's quite an art form, isn't it?
Yeah. And I struggled with it. I mean, I've been in quite a few courts, either as giving evidence or supporting people in the court.
You know. Yeah, you've probably had to vouch for some people that have done some serious things.
I have. And I've had judges say to me in court, well, I'm not taking anything that you've said into account at all. You know, so I wasn't very persuasive.
Because I've heard your podcast.
Yeah.
A load of rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that believability side, whether you're trying to persuade people something you even believe is interesting. Because I'm trying to bang the environmental drum quite a lot at the moment. I could do way more, but I'm conscious that I don't want to bombard people online and stuff too much. So that's where my kind of persuasive powers, that's why I want to do this episode, actually. But anyway, basically Trump, it always comes around to him, doesn't it? Because he talks a lot in terms of how he thinks climate change is a myth or man-made climate change, and it's all rubbish, etc., etc. But it's quite obvious that he's saying it. He doesn't really care if it's true or false. He's just saying that because there's a certain section of society which wants to hear that, because they want their old jobs back, their old way of life, coal mine, that kind of thing. The oil industry, which can see that their business is about to fall off the edge of a cliff.
Yep.
So that if they hear this politician saying what they want them to hear, they might line his pockets a little bit.
But that means that he's persuaded them to support him and persuaded them to put him in power.
Yeah. No matter what else he done, no matter how many pussies he may have grabbed.
Yes. Meow.
Yeah.
And that is the power of propaganda.
Yeah. So that's another thing. My dissertation at uni was about political propaganda, more like on the design side, grab posters from the Second World War, that kind of thing.
But the thing about that visual imagery that you're talking about, it's just subliminal. It happens below our awareness, which is why it's so effective. Yeah. It happens underneath our cognitive awareness, so we don't question it, we just take it in.
Yeah, so as much as I hate Trump and the Brexit and all that, you've got to take your hat off to the kind of the messaging and the advertising people that came up with Make America Great Again and Take Back Control.
Your country needs you.
Yeah.
Those coming,
yeah, exactly. It's powerful, isn't it? It's like you saw these, like Farage with his what was the poster? The huge poster he had with the line of refugees.
Yeah.
Breaking point. That's it. Yeah. Breaking point. And I saw it. And I was like, that bastard. But part of me was like, that's good. I mean, that's going to win it.
Was it Boris that had the money on the side of the bus all going to be put back into the NHS? Well, where is it? Because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I know. We just go around in circles, aren't they? But yeah, I mean, how do we... People are so entrenched with their views now, aren't they, on politically. How do we change people's minds? How do we reverse these?
Well, what we're learning is...
This is like me and you, because there's a lot of people might be listening that think that Trump and Brexit are the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading a thing the other day that said Boris is the favourite for taking over as Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. You know.
Jacob Rees-Mogg in second, yeah.
Yeah. And to me, that's a terrifying prospect, but for other people, that might be joy and wonder.
Because he says what he thinks. Doesn't mince his words, does he? He says what he thinks.
But the trouble is that what he thinks doesn't have a lot of value. It's a little bit like Trumpy, really.
Well, I know that, but how do we persuade the people that think he's great that maybe just to kind of
rethink? I think that maybe one of the things that you persuaded me of, and you've done it, you bleat on about it a bit, but it's through example, is the fact that you use your bike every day to get around, and you've made...
Do I talk about cycling much, guys? Come on.
All the time.
Yeah.
And that makes me think, because I spend a good half of my week travelling around the world, and I could be on a bike rather than in a car, especially as the weather gets a bit clearer. Like cycling in the snow and the rain.
Yeah, whatever the weather.
But I'm thinking like a bike with an electric assist, so that I don't arrive to see people sweating like a pig, which would be quite good.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. But I don't need to be using my car every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't need. And my car's a diesel car. It's supposed to be efficient and a clean diesel car. But we've got all the problems now with diesels and doctors against diesel and all that kind of stuff. So I could be using my bike.
Yep. You know? So what have I done that's...
Just the fact that you do it. The fact that I observe you doing it. I mean, you've come in today on your bike, and the weather out there, to be quite honest, has been appalling today. Mm. It's freezing cold. It's really windy. It's been sleety rain. You know what I mean? And it's like I'm thinking, I had problems walking down the road from the car to here. I'm thinking you came on your bike.
I got a lad to school on his bike as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both did. In fact, I think his was the only bike in the rack today. That's
no, I'm not. I wonder why. Yeah. Is this child abuse?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm just thinking back who persuaded me that cycling to work was a guy. I think basically I didn't really have much of a choice because we have one car. Okay, we could have got a second car, but it's a lot of cash in it, and then there's the extra costs. And where we live, actually, there's no off-road parking, so we don't have a driveway.
Yeah.
So it would just mean parking a hassle because we'd be fighting with neighbours over spaces and parking around the corner every night. So it's kind of a necessity for me. Mm. But now I've seen the light. I'm trying to encourage other people to do it, but occasionally I drift into that angry cyclist mode where someone nearly kills me or doesn't see me, and I get the red mist and I'll shout, and maybe occasionally I might even tap on the window politely.
But do you think that could be, I know you're feeling negative at the time, but could that be positively persuasive in the sense that the driver would be more aware next time they see a cyclist?
Maybe more aware, but I don't think they'll be more likely to use a bike to do whatever journey they're doing.
No. Think if you drag them out of the car and beat them. That would help.
Well, yeah. I'll try that.
It might make you feel better.
Yeah. But I think, mainly I'm just trying to be polite, be friendly, you know, wave when a driver does something like nice to let me through or that kind of thing.
I'm going to buy you an air horn because they are so effective. They are so effective because they are so loud that people can't pretend that you're not there.
Yeah. Because if I want one, Will, I want one on his bike, though. You know that.
So that's fabulous, yeah.
Buy one, get one.
He'll just be pressing them all the time. But when you press it, everyone in the street turns round because it's so loud.
Mm. Yeah.
But it makes a very clear statement, as in move out the way.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't come.
Don't try and push me around.
Yeah.
Just because I'm on a bike.
Yeah.
Coming through.
Yeah.
That would have been good. There was a bin lorry that came past me, like, within inches, just up the road from here last week. Absolutely ridiculous. Like, would have squashed me flat. As a pancake, an air horn would have been really good. I did shout at him because I went past him again at the set of lights. I proper gave him a proper squeal. I saw him like looking around, like not even knowing, didn't look at me, didn't, obviously just wasn't aware at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you wear bright clothes? Do you?
No, I don't actually.
Yes, perhaps not wearing the black.
No, well, that's one of the things. If you look at people that are properly trying to promote cycling, it's like we shouldn't have to be doing that. I know that it does help visually. I have a light on my helmet and I have lights, but I shouldn't have to drive around like a Christmas
tree. Have you seen those arms that you can have on the back of your bike?
Mm-hmm.
It's an arm that sticks out the width that people should leave it, and it has like a red sign on the...
Right, I haven't seen that actually, no, but that's, most drivers don't even know that you're supposed to give 1.5 metres minimum.
Yeah.
Because you any less than that and it's like, you can feel it, you can feel it.
Yeah, it's the wind.
The wind. So there's a bit of education needs going on. But yeah, we shouldn't need cyclists to wear anything. I rode in jeans and a coat. I've got a light for when it's dark, but it's, the drivers should know that we're there and give space. So, because I see kids walking to school, there's like a, it's called the school bus or something like that, the walking bus. The kids walking from one school to the other in the morning where they've had like a morning activity thing because the parents have to go to work early, and they all wear high-vis jackets to cross the road together. Just so those precious car drivers can see that the driver... But really, kids shouldn't have to wear high-vis jackets to walk on a pavement and to cross the road.
I get what you're saying, but I'm not persuaded because it's the issue of, at least if you're visible, then people that are being ignorant in their car driving are forced to be aware of you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can see that.
And the feeling that you'd like them to be aware of you is maybe more of a dream than a reality.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
The countries with the highest rate of cycling, Denmark, Holland, have the lowest rate of helmet use and of any... You go to Amsterdam, you won't see anyone with a high-vis jacket. Because it's just people... That's what people use to get around. It's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we've got work to do. But yeah, in terms of persuasion, I'm trying to be positive and... be the happy cyclist rather than the angry one that's getting in everyone's way.
Yeah. Well, when the weather clears up, you'll see me arriving on a bicycle.
You'll love it, man.
I'll have a sexy helmet on.
Like mine. It's pretty snazzy helmet, Mike.
Yes, yeah. The trouble is I always look like a tit with a hat on.
Mm.
You know. What do you mean, yes? Thank you.
That's why I got a helmet that didn't look like I was about to do the Tour de France.
Yeah.
I don't wear lycras or any of that lot.
So is that a good safety factor, that one?
It's fine. If it's on sale in the UK, it's fine for... I wouldn't wear a helmet if I didn't, if it was safe to ride on the roads and weren't cars whizzing by me.
Yeah.
People in Holland and Denmark don't wear helmets to ride.
Yeah.
Is it safe?
Yeah.
Even though there are cars next to them. There's more awareness. Let's not talk about cycling the whole time. I know. I should say, but it's just a cycling
maybe
podcast.
One just on cycling.
Sorry if anyone zoned out a bit there.
Yeah. What's that?
There's a few links I'm going to stick in the show notes that I think are really cool. Forbes.com, I think it's the 21 Principles of Persuasion. Some really good there. More from a business point of view side of things, but they can apply to all areas of life, can't they? Because we're constantly trying to persuade people all the time to do things, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, what I've done on the blog to go with this is I've identified those 7 personality types that it uses as a standard. So we're looking at physical, social, intellectual, emotional, cognitive, intuitive, and creative types. And I've looked at the positive and negative drivers that you'd use in persuasion with each of those kinds of people.
Right.
One thing that's really, really important to realise is that when you're trying to be persuasive, it's not one size fits all.
Mm.
And you have to understand who you're dealing with to get your message right.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, because people of different personality types have different... There are different ways to persuade them.
Yeah. And it's like some people learn through action, some people learn through listening. You know, it's all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, some people... Yeah. Cold hard facts are enough sometimes, or quite often it's not. We know that smoking kills. We know there's too much plastic in the world or in the oceans we need to keep back, but the fact that it's happening isn't always enough.
Yeah.
Is it?
No.
There's other ways you need to convince people.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are so many examples of behaviours that we know are bad, but we carry on doing them. And we all do that. So why do we all demand that the packaging from our supermarkets is what it is? Because they wouldn't do it if we said that we didn't want it.
Yeah, we had Jodie on a few weeks ago, didn't we, about talking about veganism.
Yeah.
And I know she'll be persuading people every day, you know, it'll be top of her list of things that she wants people to do. And we did briefly discuss actually how we go about converting people to vegetarianism initially and veganism if possible, etc., etc.
But it's the example, isn't it? It's like I was saying then, it's like if you make a vegan burger that tastes so absolutely amazing, then people would want to eat it. Yeah, and it's easier to do that positive drive persuasion than the negative don't do that. It's like, oh, do this.
Yeah, well, the thing that with Tesla and the electric car that they put out, it wasn't enough that it was had to be as good as a petrol car. It had to be better in every single way. And it is. It's faster, it's quieter, it's cheaper to run, it's safer, it's obviously greener. Depending on where you get your electricity from, and it goes far enough, you can go 300 miles. Who drives more than 300 miles in one sitting?
Yeah.
Stop and charge it up while you're having your lunch, laughing.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it's an expensive car, obviously, so it's not quite there yet. But all of a sudden, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? It's like, okay, right, fine, electric's better.
I've been looking at the different electric alternatives, and the only ones that are actually on the road that you can use, things like a Twizy. Have you seen those?
Oh yeah, the little Renault. Yeah, they're cool. Yeah.
But they only do about 45 miles.
Yeah. So, but how much? How many miles do you do every day in your little Mercedes on average?
If I'm bobbing around the world, I'm going to be dipping over to Liverpool today. So I probably need, 60 miles plus maybe.
Mm. Yeah.
I'd have to sort of measure it on a daily
basis.
Probably
less than you think, but yeah.
Well, can you take a Twizy through the tunnel?
I think you can, because you can take a motorbike through.
Yeah.
It's basically a motorbike with a roof, isn't it?
Yeah. There is somebody who's created the first hybrid motorbike, scootery motorbike, which is...
Hybrid?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's got both the petrol engine and the...
electric.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is doing something like 160 miles per gallon of fuel. Kind of thing.
Yeah, big change there. Big change. Because I'm obsessed with that stuff, and I look at the... Every now and again, I'll see a promoted post on Facebook about electric cars, etc., etc. And I look at the comments underneath, and it's just negative, 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 negative. How far does it go on one charge? Yeah, it's rubbish. It doesn't go as fast. It accelerates. Even though there's people are kind of so willing to kind of not trust something, aren't they, initially? But then all of a sudden...
But if you look at cities, like in London, and it's something like the average speed is 7 miles an hour, through the bulk of London. So it doesn't matter how flashy your car is, it's only doing 7 miles an hour.
All right, have you got resource of the week?
What I've done is I've put it's the Amazon page up, which has all the books that are related to the art of persuasion.
Cool.
And that has a massive, from the kind of alternative ideas right the way through to psychological research.
Yeah,
so there's a whole load of resources there to look at and play with.
Lovely. I'm going to mention one I have mentioned before. It's a film called 12 Angry Men. Definitely in my top five films of all time. Henry Fonda.
Is that a jury?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's absolute. Right. I could watch it over and over again all day. It's basically the premise is there's a young guy who's kind of definitely committed this crime. I think it's a murder. Yeah. The jury just wants to go home. It's an open shut case. He did it. This old man saw him do it. Let's go home, let's get on with our lives. And then so they go around the jury, guilty, 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 guilty. And then this one guy in the end, Henry Fonda, says not guilty. And then for the next hour and a half, it's his job to persuade the other jury members why he thinks there might be a chance. And it's just incredible, man, to watching him persuade one by one. Definitely top five, maybe top three films of all time.
I'm seeing whether I can find it. It's not on Netflix.
No, it's probably on YouTube, free, you know. It's that old in a movie. I think it's probably, I think almost certainly is on YouTube. Incredible. Watch it.
Yeah.
I order you.
Are you persuaded?
Big time. Okay, we're all done.
12 Angry Men, the full movie, is on
YouTube. There's no excuse. You can watch it for free. on your lunch hour. It's quite snappy, hour and a half. Okay, that's it. We'll be talking next week about eating disorders, I think, because it's actually some kind of national, international week of eating disorders. I don't think we've spoken about that specifically. Liveinthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links for this week's show and all previous episodes as well. And have a good week till then.
I will.
See you later.
You take care. Bye.